It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Abracadabra. Make Professor Paul H. Stratner appear at your next event. As a professed artist of legerdemain, he will amaze, amuse, and astound you and your guests with his magical entertainment and subtle humor. For more information, visit his website at www.professortratner.com or call the magic number 410-664-6240. That's 410-664-6240. Hey, that's Telesma there, Baltimore group, and they're playing Egyptian Sun. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and our executive producer, research assistant, Laura Cordner, and our engineer is Jake Bryant. So where do you get your news? Why are so many people no longer reading their daily newspaper? I believe it's because the younger people have come to the conclusion that daily newspapers mostly provide you with the corporate media perspective. What is the corporate media perspective? Anything that supports the status quo and their advertisers. Well, let's just take a look at what's left of the Baltimore Sun papers, which is supposed to be a liberal kind of newspaper and supports only the Democrats. Some of the Sun paper's columnists do present a less corporate view, but the owners of the paper and its editors act differently. For example, during the 2004 presidential debates, President George W. Bush was photographed wearing a communication device, and Johns Hopkins University wanted to review the evidence. The New York Times refused to run the story, and Baltimore Sun followed, preventing Hopkins from doing that very important analysis, which would have probably changed the results in the election. The 2004 election, like the 2000 debacle, was stolen in Ohio when over 380,000 votes were missing. And again, our local and national media refused to cover this story, even when the majority of Ohio's election board were fired or resigned. And, of course, President George W. Bush's close ties with Diebold, who manufactured the voting machines, and its creator were, well, they were ignored. No headlines in the Sun papers or corporate media, and they just refused to cover it. What about 9/11? Are you aware that a 9/11 2006 MSNBC Day poll revealed that up to 68% of those responded that 9/11 may have been contrived within the U.S. government. Who profited by 9/11 as far as stock activity? Well, none can be traced to bin Laden, but to persons connected with the CIA, and in particular, A.B. Buzzy Krongard, then executive director of the CIA, who profited by millions of dollars. Yes, the Sun papers made a great deal of his troubles with his brother, but not a word about profits he made from 9/11 by selling short on his airplane stocks. The same can be said when our local press focused on the General Motors debacle, wherein they never mentioned General Motors' destruction of all its electric cars so they could purchase the Hummer, a story told by the award-winning DVD Who Killed the Electric Car? Now, all of the above are, well, that's just a few major stories our corporate media, including the Sun papers, decided weren't important for you to know about. And that's a major reason why the young and better educated republic, educated in a republic, let's hope, do not depend on corporate media to learn what they can. They learn on the internet because corporate news seldom, if ever, gives you insight into what's behind the usual don't rock the boat and the support of the status quo. And joining us for the first hour and a half tonight is Jim Mars to address his latest brilliant book, Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, published by the Disinformation Company Limited. Mars served in military intelligence with the U.S. Army before becoming an independent journalist and author. He is considered the world's leading conspiracy author with multi-million bestsellers such as Alien Agenda, Rule by Secrecy, and the book that Oliver Stone used as a basis for his JFK movie, Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy. Other recent titles from Mars include Rule by Secrecy, The Hidden History That Connects the Trilateral Commission, The Terror Conspiracy, Deception 9/11, and The Loss of Liberty, and The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Jim.
Hey, Dr. Bob. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Ditto. Now, what's a conspiracy theorist?
Well, let's break the word down. First, let's talk about conspiracy. That comes from the Latin word conspirae, which simply means to breathe together. In other words, to act in concert. So, actually, at its most basic, conspiracy is neither good nor bad. If you plan to have a surprise birthday party for your boss, that's a conspiracy. It's not a bad conspiracy. The problem has been that ever since the Kennedy assassination, conspiracy has been downplayed, denigrated by the corporate mass media, and pretty well relegated to just far-out ideas. Okay? And yet, there are still many, many people in our prison systems today convicted of conspiracy. So conspiracy is neither good nor bad. It's just there. Of course, if you act in concert with others to violate the laws or to kill people or to harm people, obviously that's an evil act. And then, of course, you have the word theory or a theorist, someone who theorizes about things. And, of course, the simple answer to that is, as you well know, Dr. Bob, if you can prove something, it's not a theory, is it? And yet they have used the term conspiracy theorist to try to place a negative connotation on anyone who would offer an alternative explanation for events that have happened in our recent history. And yet, having dealt with this now for the better portion of my life, I can tell you that in the main, the conspiracy theorists have been proven to be more true than the official pronouncements. Just a few cases in point, and I'll go back to the topic that I cut my journalistic teeth on, which would have been the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Number one, for 15 years, no one got to see the famous Zapruder film. Today, everybody's seen it. Everybody can plainly see that he's thrown to the rear and to the left, indicating a shot from the front. But people, but younger people have to understand, for 15 years, nobody got to see that. Instead, we were told various things, that Oswald acted alone, which now has been seriously called into question. In fact, every bit of hard evidence against Lee Harvey Oswald, oh, we found his fingerprints on the rifle. Well, the fingerprints were placed there by FBI agents in the funeral home. Funeral home director, who's still alive and will still tell you that. So that fell away. Then, well, the bullet fragments in the car matched the bullet metal of Oswald's ammunition. Well, that's been called into question. Then you have the acoustical test that said at least one shot was fired from the grassy knoll. So one by one, everything we were told has fallen away. We were told Jack Ruby had no connection to anybody and he was not connected to organized crime. That's now just accepted. Of course he was. It's been fully proven. He was even running messages for Al Capone back in the 1930s in Chicago. We were told that Lee Harvey Oswald had no connection with the mysterious character David Ferry in New Orleans, and yet a few years ago, public television, in the process of trying to assure us that Oswald acted alone, nevertheless did show us a photograph of David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald together at a Civil Air Patrol meeting. So just about everything we were told about that has since been proven to be wrong. So,
as you note,
if you hear someone who's a conspiracy theorist, pay attention to them.
Yeah, you certainly should. I know that I always have, and that's always, you know, some conspiracies are more verifiable than others, obviously. But to close your mind to it is just the old sticking your head in the sand kind of trick, which we've been doing this last past 8 years. As you note, by the 1970s, 80% of Americans believed that JFK died at the hands of a conspiracy. But of course, corporate media, especially in more recent years, has made sure that they're going to try to have the last word on that.
You're absolutely correct, Dr. Bob. In fact, if you really go back and think about it, the last official word of the United States federal government was the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which concluded about 1980 that there had been another shooter on the grassy knoll, and therefore there was probably a conspiracy. But they said, we're out of time and money, and we have to ask the Justice Department to continue the investigation. And what did the Justice Department do? Number one, nothing. Nada. Okay? But what they did do was go to the American Academy of Sciences and try to handpick a committee that would call into question the acoustical evidence. Mm-hmm. So you're right. The last official word of the federal government was that there was probably a conspiracy consisting of at least two shooters. And yet the corporate mass media to this very day tries to hammer down the idea that Oswald acted alone.
They certainly have. And there's no doubt about that. That's just a fact. Now, you note, I'm just trying to, I know that we're going to come up at a break in about 3 minutes, and I don't want to get too deeply in a whole series of other questions that I have for you, But in regards to the Internet, one of the things I liked about your book, this is an extremely fair book. And, you know, you bend over backwards not to appear biased as far as I'm concerned. Especially the very last, I'll call it a chapter, a warning on the Internet. And all of us realize that, you know, you just can't go up to the Internet and accept everything that's written there. And unfortunately, in many different areas of research, that is done. I don't think, I know that in my daughter's college at Hofstra up there, you know, you can do all of your papers from the Internet.
Right.
And I'll tell you, Jim, it's a hell of a lot easier than what we had to go through, needless to say.
It kind of calls into question the whole validity of a college education.
Indeed. I mean,
are you really educated or can you just use the Internet?
Yeah. You know, as Dan Brown knows, he can borrow whatever he wants. He's gotten away with it. I enjoy his work. I think it's great and very interesting. But all the people that he borrowed from, unfortunately, were not noted. They weren't mentioned. And that can be a very sad and a huge sore spot as far as any writer is concerned.
He certainly taught me a lesson, and that was that I researched and dug in and worked and produced Rule by Secrecy, which dealt quite factually and in a journalistic manner with the whole topics of Jesus's genealogy, the mm-hmm. Knights Templar, the Rennes-le-Château mystery, and Dan Brown simply took all that and rolled it into a rollicking novel, and he made millions. So,
millions.
Taught me a valuable lesson.
He made hundreds of millions. And they figure that after the next film and everything comes out and his new book, he's going to be a billionaire. And that is quite interesting. But, look, we are going to cover some real interesting stories. Stories that the corporate media ignores or debunks by omission. And you note that omission is the big sin of corporate media. Could you explain what that really means? And then when we return, we'll get into some of these. Let's start with 9/11 after we get back on.
Right. Well, having worked in the corporate media for a good number of years, the basic problem there, I think, boils down to simply laziness. It's a whole lot easier to write a government press handout than it is to go out and research and do the gumshoe work it takes to actually prove up the truth of some topic. That's the main problem. But then you also have the fact that the corporate mass media is, after all, owned by about six corporations, multinational corporations. And I'll give you a classic example. One thing that everybody in this country is obviously concerned with is the rising tide of teen suicides and school shootings. And the only thing the mass media can talk about is guns. Oh, we have to take guns away. Well, excuse me, I grew up in Texas. We all had guns. We took guns to school. No one ever shot anybody. The problem is psychotropic drugs, okay? If you go back, you will find that virtually every school shooter was either on some sort of psychoactive drug or coming off of a psychoactive drug. But, of course, they won't talk about that because one of the leading advertisers today are the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot could be said in that area, but we're going to take a break here first. When we come back, let's take a look at 9/11 because, as you point out, an MSNBC day poll on 9/11 concluded up to 68% of Americans were at least open to the suggestion that 9/11 was contrived within the United States. A big shocker there, huh? Well, we'll be back with our guest, Jim Mars. The book is Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, the Disinformation Company. Check it out on jimmars.com. Now, Mars is spelled M-A-R-R-S, Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S.com.
No matter who we are or what we do, our health is a priority. To stay well or to recover from an illness or injury, consider using options that are safe, natural, and in some cases, thousands of years old. From acupuncture to modern-day massage, counseling, and homeopathic medicine, the Ruscomb Mansions Community Health Center offers children and adults numerous health care and support services. Find out more about the Ruscomb Mansions yoga classes and weekend programs. Call 410-367-7300. That's 367-7300.
Here's another reason to boycott Exxon, friends. The elaborate debunking machine on global warming is funded largely by Lee Raymond, the CEO of ExxonMobil. Since the year 2000, Exxon has donated at least $8 million to right-wing think tanks that ridicule climate change in the mainstream media. Exxon is funding more than three dozen organizations to foster the illusion that there is widespread scientific controversy over global warming. Lee Raymond is now the only leading energy executive to deny that humans are heating up the planet. More information on the web at exposeexxon.com.
Hi, this is Bill Mack.
And this is Cindy.
So glad you're listening to WCBM 680 AM, and thanks so very much for listening to one of my favorite people in broadcasting, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, 21st Century Radio, always enjoyable.
Well, boy, I certainly miss Uncle Bill Mack. Hope everything is okay down there on XM Sirius Radio, and hope he had a great Christmas along with Willie Nelson. Well, our guest is Jim Mars. The book is Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, the Disinformation Company, and check it out on jimmars.com, Mars spelled with two R's, M-A-R-R-S.com. Jim, 9/11. What is leading many Americans to believe that some kind of conspiracy is involved there, or was involved?
Well, again, I think everybody would agree that there is some controversy over 9/11, but like the Kennedy assassination, it's not a true controversy. It's only the wide gap of knowledge between those who have accepted the government's own official conspiracy theory, and that's all it is, and between those who've actually studied the evidence in the case. For example, in my book, The Terror Conspiracy, and in many other places and on the internet, you can find that more than a dozen nations tried to warn us that we were about to be attacked. And interestingly enough, these even included Fidel Castro in Cuba and the Taliban in Afghanistan and yet nothing was done. Then we had the issue of war game exercises. And for about a year following 9/11, there were conspiracy theorists who were saying, wait a minute, they were conducting war game exercises on the morning of 9/11, and this is what facilitated the attacks. And that was hailed as an internet rumor, you know, just some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist talk. And yet, a year after 9/11, in his book, Against All Enemies, Richard Clark, who was the National Security Council's counterterrorism chief, wrote that when he first contacted General Richard Myers of NORAD and asked him if any interceptors had been launched, Myers responded, well, we're in the middle of Vigilant Warrior, a NORAD exercise. And other NORAD officials, such as Lieutenant Colonel Dawn Deeskins, she received word of the hijackings, she immediately thought, well, this must be part of the exercise. Why weren't we talk about that? And the much-vaunted 9/11 Commission, how did they explain these war game exercises? Well, they didn't. They just barely mentioned it in a footnote. And yet, according to Sergeant Laura Chavez that I interviewed, who's with Central Command, he said that not only were they in the middle of war game exercises, which for the first time in his experience had been classified, that some of these exercises involved a scenario of hijacked planes crashing into prominent structures, including and specifically naming the World Trade Center. Now, as he said, what are the odds? And what are the odds? It's really amazing. And as you've already mentioned, we were told by the establishment media in the days following 9/11 that there was very suspicious short selling of stock on the stock exchange, indicating foreknowledge of these attacks. And they said, we're going to track this to see if it doesn't link us to Osama bin Laden. And then you never heard another word about that story, because as you pointed out, it was not tracked to Osama bin Laden. Those sales were tracked to people with connections to within the CIA. So this is a very serious topic. It's a topic that deserves very serious investigation and further study.
Certainly, especially that one particular area. Usually you always hear in the media, you know, follow the money line here, follow the money track. And there it was, but they didn't follow it.
No.
And for obvious reasons, the corporate media did not want to get involved in this for one reason or the other. But your book does this such a hell of a good job, especially in the area of I had no idea. I didn't before I read your earlier book on this that you came on in 2006 to discuss this, that so much had been forgotten, almost like, especially the collapse of the World Trade Center. I remember many researchers saying, hey, wait a second, buildings don't collapse like that. There was not enough heat to melt those girders. And as a matter of fact, you do point those things out.
Right.
And yet none of that. So, and of course, there is always when you take a look at the Pentagon issue and the airplane that allegedly crashed into the Pentagon and burned totally up. Everything burned up.
The engine and the wheel assemblies and the tail and those 2-ton titanium steel bladed jet engines out, well, they just melted away because of that fire. And yet I myself interviewed April Gallup, who along with her small child crawled through the hole in the west side of the Pentagon to get out of there, and I can't help but wonder, well, how did she survive?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and all the cameras that were around that somehow just didn't catch it, and all the film that's been collected by our government that people will never see again, all of that is a lot.
Absolutely correct. 82 security cameras all had their lenses trained on the Pentagon, and yet we've never seen any of that except for about 15 frames, which essentially show nothing. Even Bill O'Reilly, that government mouthpiece. You know, he watched it and said, I didn't see any plane, and neither did anybody else.
Yeah. Well, we're going to move on to another. There are a lot of great stories in here. We're not going to touch on. Yeah, I got it, because you're the only one that talks about it very much that I've read. And that is peak oil and how oil was created. I remember my friends, Chris Bird, Teeter Tompkins, and 30-some years ago, we're talking about, hey, there's all these other theories as to how oil is created, not just things that decay that create it. But tell us a little bit about this, because I think most Americans are totally unaware of this.
Right, exactly. Well, that goes back to the mid-1800s when, even though people had been aware of oil for years, they'd use it in lamps and stuff, but they didn't really think that there was much use to it. But then the Industrial Revolution came along, and they realized that oil was necessary for industry and for war machines, both as fuel and as lubricants. So all of a sudden, oil became the predominant energy source on this planet, and at that time, when they began to study it in the mid-1800s, they did find organic matter within the oil, so they theorized that, well, it must have been formed deep underground where dinosaurs and ancient trees and ferns were mushed under the pressure of the layers of the earth, and it eventually turns into petrochemicals, which seeps up into these caverns and that. So that must be the way oil is formed. And that's what we've all pretty much been taught. And yet that was just a theory, okay? Mm-hmm. Today, there are very qualified people all around the world who say, no, we have found oil in strata that does not contain any organic matter and was not being compressed under there. And then, so the whole idea of fossil fuel is being called into question. But, of course, we don't hear much about that because the giant petroleum companies also are the largest advertisers and have interlocking boards of directorship. And so they don't want people to think that oil comes from somewhere else. But it's more and more, especially since they have now found that some of the depleted reservoirs are refilling.
Yeah.
So it appears that oil is some sort of a product of hydrogen cracking process that takes place deep within the earth, and the oil seeps up. And of course, it would naturally seep into caverns and caves and empty spaces, which at one time may have housed saber-toothed tigers and cavemen and discarded plants and stuff, which could account for why the organic matter is in petroleum. So the point being is that there are now several alternative theories on what oil is, where it is, and how it's formed. And, of course, this goes totally contrary to the present prevalent idea that's being very much ballyhooed by oil-hired experts and by their corporate mass media, which is the idea of peak oil, that we have reached the peak of oil, and from now on there's not going to be any more. In fact, this, of course, is the basis for the oil depletion allowance, which is a idea concocted by the oil people, which says, well, when we pump oil out of the ground, we're just taking a finite resource, and it's going to run out, and therefore we are using up our basic resource, and therefore we should get tax credits for this, which they have. Mm-hmm. And the oil depletion allowance has been at the heart of the oil profits for many, many decades now. Of course, this would be called into question if it turns out that oil is a self-replenishing type of resource. So there's just a lot there that people have not been told about.
Also, you point out something very important that I have not heard discussed in some time, about Nazi Germany's creation of a fuel during World War II. And somehow we've never been able to learn what the hell that formula is. How come we can't learn?
That is very true.
Now that we've taken over all their records, why in the world don't we know why can't we do that now?
Exactly. Yes, Germany, of course, is pretty much landlocked in the middle of Europe, And during World War II, they were very much at the mercy of very interruptible oil supplies. So they came up with a synthetic oil, and they had synthetics, and they were running making synthetic fuels and oils and lubricants. And at the end of the war, all of that material, all of their research and all of their papers was grabbed up by the U.S. government. It's been locked away. It's classified. There was even a movie made about that called The Formula. It seems like George C. Scott was in it or something. And it was about that very thing, about how they lock away alternative energy sources. And, of course, for people who are truly concerned with the present state of the world and of the future, then this is huge, because if we can provide alternative sources of energy, then we're not totally dependent on oil and petrochemicals, which means maybe we don't need to have all these wars in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because that's what they're really about, as we all know, and we've known that for decades.
Sure.
Friends, I am avoiding some very important chapters here dealing with UFOs, because we talk about them so often, such as the Stevensville and Texas sightings, and of course, updates dealing with Roswell and Chicago, and we might touch on one of them, but we seldom get a chance to discuss this kind of material on 21st Century Radio because we're only on once a week, and we focus on things that I believe our listeners need to learn more about, such as, and we're going to take our break, but my Lord, you do a great job in dealing with the Federal Reserve, how it was created, and how using the central bank can create alternate periods of inflation and deflation. I think we need to touch on that, because I believe it has something to do with our federal bailout that we're going through right now. So
yes, we see it in action right now, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So when we come back, we'll give you a quiz on that, okay? Our guest is Jim Mars, Above Top Secret. Uncover the mysteries of the digital age, the disinformation company. Check it out at Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S.com.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, the Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com, or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
Hi, this is Phyllis Galdi, editor-in-chief of Fate Magazine, F-A-T-E Magazine, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with the wonderful, famous Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Boy, sounds like we're drifting off into some kind of movie here. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest Jim Mars, Above Top Secret. Uncover the mysteries of the digital age, the disinformation company. Check it out on MARRS.com. Oh, yes, now, Federal Reserve is our bank. It's our national bank. It may not be national, but it's our bank. What the heck?
Bob, do you recall that, because you're somewhere close to my age, and for most of our lifetime, you never heard the term central bank. It was never used.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay? It was just the Federal Reserve. But just within about the past decade, all of a sudden in the mainstream news, they'll say, the central bank today lowered interest rates, and all of a sudden, we have a central bank where in reality, the question of a central bank was one of the most contentious issues that was handled by our forefathers.
I was very surprised. I mean, you do such a good job historically in this particular area, showing how it lost out three, four times before finally it took hold, and how it took hold around the time of the Wilson administration really was an extraordinary story in itself. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about how that was done.
Okay. Well, first, of course, as George Santayana said, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it, and we are now repeating it because we don't know our history. The early American colonies printed small quantities of paper money based on the trade and industry and the products and the consumers, and they were prospering. But then in 1764, the British Parliament passed a law saying that it was the Bank of England Currency Act of 1764, and they said, "We will no longer can you print your own money. You have to deal with Bank of England money," which, of course, and then this prompted Benjamin Franklin to write, "The colonies would gladly have borne the little tax on tea and other matters, had it not been that England took away from the colonies their money, which created unemployment and dissatisfaction." So the American Revolution was not fought over a tax on tea. It was fought over the idea that had lost control of the money supply. This has then prompted Thomas Jefferson to write, and I'm paraphrasing, "If we ever allow bankers to gain control over our money supply, our descendants will wake up without property in the country we founded."
Uh-oh.
And when I drive around today, Dr. Bob, I'm reminded of that because I go through the big cities and I see just mile after mile of apartments and condominiums that people are leasing, and they are paying through their credit cards on their electronics and on their cars. And, they don't own anything. And it's really incredible. And it all comes back to the idea of what is money, how do we get our money. The way we get our money now is through the Federal Reserve System, which was slipped in during a Christmas holiday in 1913 and framed as a Banking Reform Act. And yet what it did was it took the creation of the money supply and the handling of the national economy out of the hands of Congress, out of the hands of the public, and put it in the hands of the bankers, because the Federal Reserve is 12 Federal Reserve districts, and all headed by a Federal Reserve Bank. There's one in Dallas, and they're all answerable to the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. These banks, in turn, are owned by other banks, which are owned by private individuals, many of them not even United States citizens. And basically, the way it works is that Congress simply authorizes more debt, and the Federal Reserve System, the bankers, then spend a few hundred dollars on paper and ink, and they print up billions of dollars of currency, and they issue it out to the public and to the banking system. Now, they don't charge just for what it costs them, the paper and the ink. They charge us for the billions. They charge interest on the billions mm-hmm. that they have issued out of thin air. And this is the national debt. This is what we are paying on year after year, and this is why every year we're more and more broke. We have to borrow more and more money. It's now up anywhere between $8 and $12 trillion that we're in debt. In fact, it's been estimated that every single man, woman, and child in this country, if they cashed in every asset they have, we still could not repay the debt that this country is now in. Just over my lifetime, we have moved from being a rich, balanced budget nation to a debtor nation. It's really incredible. That's where we are, and we don't even understand why that's going on. And now we can see that with the current financial meltdown, that they are then turning to the taxpayers to bail everybody out.
Yeah.
And now the bankers are even more in control because they are consolidating all of the banks into a handful fully supported by the public, which has no say-so in how they're run, which is a very fascist form of socialism. But this socialism is not going for social programs. It's for going for corporate and banking bailouts. It's just really incredible.
Well, I'd like to quote something on page 95 in your book. Congressman Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. accurately proclaimed when this finally went through that from now on, depressions will be scientifically created. Also, as you quote from Alan and Abraham, using a central bank to create alternate periods of inflation and deflation, whipsawing the public. I believe that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yes, of course it is. And it's just, to me, it's incredible that the public, and that means you and I and all our friends and neighbors, we're all just kind of sitting by scratching our heads while they basically just loot this country and take it away from us. Dr. Bob, if you and I formed a company and we produced a product, and number one, that product was not wanted, and nobody really wanted to buy it, so nobody bought it, well, we'd go broke. That's our responsibility. That's what's known as free enterprise, okay? We're free to go into the enterprise, and then if we can't make money at it, then we're free to go broke.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, if we produced a product that was harmful, that was bad, then we are liable for court action, and they would hold us responsible for making a ill-conceived and damaging product. And yet today we've got the car manufacturers going to the government saying, oh, you know, there's going to be the heavens will fall if you don't subsidize us. And again, now we're going into a socialist type program where the taxpayers are subsidizing what used to be private industry. That's not free enterprise. That's not even true capitalism. That is socialism. And that is what we are sliding into at a very rapid pace today.
Now, in regards to what's happening today, could you be very specific as to how this has unfolded in the last couple of, the last several months in regards to the collapse of our country?
Yes. If you would read my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, you will find out that the very same financial powers who created communism and Zionism in Russia then became fearful because communism threatened to spread worldwide, and they, even though they do want a worldwide socialist program, they don't want one world socialism because then they're not able to play off one nation against another or one economic bloc against another for maximum profit and control. So they became fearful, so they turned to Germany, and they found a German army intelligence agent who they supported in building up a political party there called the National Socialist German Workers' Party. The German acronym for that was Nazi. Okay, so they created the Nazis, they funded the Nazis, and I'm talking about major American businesses, some of which are still here and still very powerful. AT&T, IBM, Ford Motor Company, General Motors, Standard Oil. These were all companies who supported Hitler before, during, and after World War II.
But you can't forget.
Of Hitler.
You can't forget Prescott Bush.
And Prescott Bush.
You know,
Prescott,
this is the
Bush
grandfather.
The Bushes came into power thanks to their mentor, the Harrimans. And Prescott Bush was a director of Union Banking Corporation that was handling the money for Fritz Thyssen, the primary funder of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. And he continued to do that well into the war. In fact, in late 1942, almost halfway through World War II for us, he was actually prosecuted by the federal government of the United States under the Trading with the Enemies Act for being nothing more than a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis.
And they took his bank.
Nobody heard much about that because in the summer of 1942, when he undoubtedly knew they were looking into his business dealings, he created the National Service Organization, the United Service Organization, the USO, so beloved even today by anyone who's been in the service. And so they were facing a propaganda disaster if they had to come out and make a big deal about the man who created the USO was actually a front man for Hitler and the Nazis. So they just fined him millions of dollars and took his holdings away from him. But he continued to have other Nazi-connected holdings. So these financial powers, they were grew fearful of Hitler and Germany. They wanted to defeat them because they did not want Germany running the world economic order. And so after World War II, they decided, though, that they would bring National Socialism to the United States. And they did that. One of the people who tried to stand up to them was President John F. Kennedy, and you see what happened to him. In fact, I might mention that the only two U.S. presidents who have tried to bypass the international bankers and issue their own money through the Treasury Department was Abraham Lincoln, who issued greenbacks to finance the war between the states, and John F. Kennedy, who in June of 1963 issued $4.2 billion in currency, not through the Federal Reserve System that we have to pay interest to, but through the Treasury Department, which we don't have to pay interest to. And frankly, I don't think it was just sheer coincidence that those two men were publicly shot in the head. This is the type of mentality that you're dealing with and the kind of power that we have to deal with. So after World War II, with the installation of Nixon, who got into money on got into power on Nazi money, and George Herbert Walker Bush, who Nixon named head of the Republican National Committee, and they expunged anyone who was not of their thinking, and then on into the Reagan years, where Reagan, the movie actor, was a front man. George Herbert Walker Bush was in control after Reagan was shot. And this is when they began to bring in what has now come to be known as neoconservatism. Well, The neoconservatism, or the neocons, as they are called, are actually nothing less than national socialists. And this is why they have been building a whole new fascist system in this country.
Well, we're going to take a break here at the top of the hour, and I wish we had time to... We've covered Project Paperclip many times, and I know you're well aware of that. And I remember back in the mid-80s when all of this material started popping up again, and I was able to talk to certain National Republicans about it, and they just didn't want to talk about it at all. Big surprise, huh, Jim? We'll be back with our guest, Jim Mars, Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, the Disinformation Company, and check it out on Jim Mars, MARRS.com.
Names and talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheeler.